Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 235, being recorded on the 29th of June, 2018. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have Kale. Just telling Kale earlier how this is like just like the old days. It's just him and I on the podcast today. I believe that was our first few podcasts that we did with just the two of us, right?
For sure. Yeah. It's only taken us a couple years later to recreate that.
Well, 4 years to be precise, almost now. It's really time flies when you're having fun. But it's been, quite a hectic few days. And as a matter of fact, interesting topic that Kale brought up, we'll talk about. It does kind of discuss how technology used to be and how we want to go in the future. So that's going to be the topic that we'll talk about today. But before we get that, let's just do a quick rundown on the recent news in the Azure space. And a fair amount in there. Kale, anything that you like?
Yeah, a couple things stood out to me. One, from our CTO, Mark Rusinovich, there was a Cloud Tech Summit, GeekWire sponsored, and basically talking about some of the new Azure innovations. The blog post doesn't specifically talk about it, but if you're on LinkedIn, you'll see Mark talking about blockchain, so that's why I have to bring that up. and basically kind of reiterating the point that this is the year for kind of production blockchain infrastructure and to turn out. But in the blog post, there's some good information about the Azure Data Lake storage, the Generation 2 stuff. That's basically talking about some of the scaling pieces that have been added there and cost and all these different like factors that have gone into some of the new storage that's behind that massive kind of service for Data Lake. Mm-hmm. It talks a lot about the Intelligent Edge and, how those things are kind of evolving on the IoT space, where we're actually being able to push out some of the complex stuff that we used to run on server side. We can actually get it closer out to the edge to be able to make decisions faster while still leveraging the cloud for backend stuff. And then talks about the global infrastructure, some new Azure regions, and some plans for new regions in Norway. He kind of talked about that a little bit, and some regions in the Europe and Middle East. So take a look at that. It's got some pretty cool information, lots of nice links in there.
Yeah, and the one that I want to call out from that list over there in that blog post is the new Azure Data Lake storage, Generation 2 storage. So, typically Azure Data Lake, if you use something like Hadoop file storage, you know, they have some special requirements to have Hadoop file storage. You know, you have to have like some kind of a cluster and things like that. And now what they've done is they've enabled Azure Blob Storage to serve as a data store for Hadoop file storage. So now you don't have to set up that complex cluster storage cluster. You can just set up your connect Azure Blob Storage to Hadoop and to Data Lake. So I think that's a big one over there. But also related to storage, Azure Storage, which seems to be having a lot of news this week. If you think about storage, all our podcasts are stored in Azure Storage, as you know, the MP3 files, and we simply just put them there as publicly accessible URLs, which essentially let you download an MP3, one for each, one MP3 per episode of the podcast. And that means that, you could serve up any static content from Blob Storage. And that's kind of what the new feature that they've just released, it's out in preview now, which is you can now configure Azure Storage to be a static website because you can just put, all your HTML pages in there in a particular folder structure, which Azure Storage does support. And when it serves it up, you can just all you have to do is to say that this is a website, and this container is a website, and then it gives it a specific URL, which you can of course remap to a custom domain, I suppose, if you have to. And then anyway, then it just serves up HTML pages out of it, because it's nothing but a web server at that point. So I thought that was a nice, reuse of Azure Storage just for simple static websites. And the way, the why, the reason this is important these days is that, nowadays with the advent of single page applications, typically your website is static, right? You're just serving up some HTML, some JavaScript, well, a lot of JavaScript, some HTML, and then essentially your JavaScript is smart enough to call some web services in the back end, which then you can host in app services or something else. So I thought that was a nice feature that's now in public preview. What
Yeah.
else do you, and what else
Along
do
with
you
the
like?
static one, just to give another shout out, anybody using Ethereum, the if you go to like guest.ethereum.org, we'll put the show note link, which is basically the official server and client for Ethereum. That comes off Azure Blob Storage, just so you know. Like if you hover over the links over there, you can see that you're downloading it from Azure Blob Storage.
Nice. Yep, very, very useful there.
Cool.
What else?
Yeah. We had some other ones here. There's a great article up here, and this kind of maybe will fold into our discussion today a little bit, but around the reasons why retail should be looking to address the artificial intelligence monkey that's in the room, and basically talking about how different retail channels are actually looking at this AI. I mean, obviously people can see this in places that are really advanced, like the Amazon Go grocery store. Microsoft's announced doing something similar as that, where basically there's no cashier, and we're using a lot of different technology to kind of pull off the ability for you to go pick something off of a shelf and then walk out the door with it, and then obviously pay for it in some mechanism. And there's a combination of technology at play there, including everything from storage stuff that we're talking about to big data and AI and a bunch of other things on cognitive services side. So I think the trend here though is that retailers are starting to pay attention to this now and say we need to like evolve in this space or we're going to get left behind. Because this is where the world is actually going. The old way of trying to do everything the way we've done it for the last X amount of years is not going to work going forward. So it's a pretty nice article, and again, it gives a lot of study links out to what McKinsey and Forbes and these guys have kind of estimated in that space, and then some of the other. There's actually an ebook around in there, link in there as well.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean that's definitely the messaging we're getting also. I think I don't think it's anything internal to Microsoft, but I know Satya has written LinkedIn articles and whatnot on this as well, right? On the goal that corporations have to play in the artificial intelligence space, and being good citizens and not, abusing it for any particular purpose. I guess we've all seen movies like Terminator and all those and those sorts of things that can happen if artificial intelligence goes wacky. So yeah, let's should we just kind of dive into that discussion now? You think this is a good time? I think we've kind of wrapped up the
Yeah.
all the updates for this week. So yeah, I mean that's a good topic that you brought up, Kale. So you had some thoughts on how we did computing way back when, and then kind of morphing it into where are we at now. Do you want to have some
Yeah.
thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the patterns that we're seeing in maybe like the future or like the current time that we're seeing. But yeah, I think it, as Sajid mentioned, it's good to kind of go back and say, how does this compare and contrast to like where we came from, 20 years ago and these kind of things? I mean, and back in those days, a lot of these services that we take advantage of today, like cognitive services, AI, massive storage, these kind of things, we had to deal with, manually. There was no cloud, and so as we were building architecture, the big focus was once things started to scale up on the internet, quite a bit, SOA architecture kind of became like the big buzzword, like maybe something like blockchain is today. And it was all about SOA. Everybody's got to be SOA, which is a service-oriented architecture. And a lot of that pivoted around, web services and being able to decouple your whole backend into services and not talk to databases directly and, have these like loosely coupled applications so you can compose different things and portals and all kinds of things that kind of came along with that. And I think the patterns at that time were basically build these extremely loosely coupled applications that can talk to a service on the back end, which can be scaled kind of independently. And then, basically from that point, you could compose other applications off of that. You don't just have one, you're not locked into it. And it started to pull the UI away from the guys who were designing the UI away from the guys who were designing the back end, like the data tier. And I mean, in my experience, when we were going down this path, this was like ASP.NET 1.0. We were basically what the technology we had at that time, we were spitting out XML from the services. We had figured out how to do that and not have to run everything on the server. So we were trying to keep the load on the server as light as possible and then run something like XSLT in JavaScript on the client, which was a huge challenge then because browsers were relatively immature at that point. So JavaScript engines were a bit of a wild west, but we made that choice because we could scale the architecture, pretty big. In those days, I remember we were servicing, and this was before I joined Microsoft, our stuff was running maybe 40,000 users concurrent, probably a half a million, by lunchtime. We were running through this infrastructure, which isn't massive, but in those days, like trying to run that through server infrastructure was like really hard to do. People were spending way tons of money and trying to scale these things out, and it was pretty primitive. But I kind of think and look back at that stuff and then think about, how we've kind of evolved to the point in Azure where now it's really about like figuring out what solution you're trying to build. And not so much on the technology side. I mean, I think a lot of these scaling issues and technology issues for me have kind of been solved. There's still stuff work to do there, obviously, but a lot of the major stuff has been solved. And so it really comes down to like if I hear someone, I always pick on blockchain, but when I hear someone come to me and say like they want to build an application and we're all about blockchain, we just want to use blockchain, it's like, yeah, blockchain's part of it. But that's not, it's only one piece of it. It's like this little piece that's going to sit there as part of your app. It's super important, but AI might be part of that. And obviously you're going to need a front end. So you're going to have some sort of a UI that's going to be as part of this. And there's probably going to be some services that reach out to other things to get data into this thing. So again, it's just one component in that thing. So I kind of pivot and say, well, what are we trying to build? Like, what's the solution? What's the business problem we're trying to solve?
Yeah, no, that's very well put together. And when I think of AI and making use of it, I think the obvious thing is data, right? Where AI means analyzing a lot of data. So from that perspective, I think that's the new that kind of the new way to do to build applications is not to think about, oh, I'm going to build this fancy JavaScript app or a mobile app and things like that. I think that, as you said, those problems have been solved. Yes, there are a few enhancements that have been made in those areas, but now it's how do we make those applications more smarter and more intelligent? And so leveraging some of the things that you talked about, obviously, blockchain is something that is very disruptive and can open up a whole lot of new avenues for doing business. But also combining that with AI, I think leveraging all these technologies together is how we're going to build all these new style of applications. Some things that people have probably not envisioned just yet.
Yeah, agreed. I think the pivot point there or the pattern that I see is like moving away from like we figured out a way to like scale this thing crazy and it's like infrastructure component. It's like no, now the conversation is we figured out a way how to use machine learning along with big data and this other thing to make something that's truly unique. And so that's where the bar is now. Like people are, if you're not in that game, you should probably pay attention to that pattern because that's where people are, that's the playground right now where people are at and want to, build businesses in.
Yeah, and I do like the way that when you want to build like customer-centric applications, right? Which is eventually that's what you want to do, either your customer as part of a business or just building social networking style applications. All the AI technologies they fall into four categories, right? You can either sense, learn, reason, or act on something. And so, as you pointed out in that blog post, Microsoft has written an ebook called The Future Computer, which I have looked at. To be honest, the ebook tends to be a little bit marketing oriented around Microsoft technologies, but it does cover a lot of the concepts of AI, the four categories that we just talked about. And it's good to say that Microsoft has it's not just talking all these things. I think they put a lot of effort in creating technologies that people can developers can pick up today and start using. As you know, you mentioned cognitive services as being a key a service that we offer in Azure that will let us do that. Also, the machine learning service that we have has a lot of models built into it. Microsoft is offering these pre-trained AI models now that you can use directly without having to go through that effort of training it. Also, the bot service that we've had has been very successful. And then the Lewis, the language understanding system, which just a whole new style of application, right? I mean, people are not going to be using just standard apps the way we know it. It's going to be natural language, either typed in or spoken, or maybe just using gestures and whatnot. And we somehow have to pull all this together. The question is, what, like, how. What could potentially come out of all this if things don't go right? Right, that's always been some of the concerns that have been floating around. Well, what could go wrong if people do not build applications that will not, I guess, learn and try to be take over things themselves?
Yeah, I guess the complexity there, just to comment on that for a second, is the fact that these are like under the covers highly complex systems and models. We're talking about neural networks and things now. And years ago, unless you had a PhD, you probably didn't even know what that was or were using it. And now it's like pretty much a lot of companies are talking about this kind of technology. So certainly they're hiring, the I call them scary math guys to kind of get through some of that stuff. But it's been commoditized a bit, right? As you mentioned, through cognitive services, our AI platform, and those pieces. And as part of that, we need to understand, how to best use these services, like you said, Sajid. Maybe not having to get into the scary math, but understand from a high level, like, what are these things trying to pull off for us, whether it's a predictive type model that we're trying to train, how do we train it, and how do we kind of control it or have parameters around that thing in order to make it something that people can, A, understand, and B, it becomes valuable, in the infrastructure. I think along with that, too, is there's a lot of pressure around this now with GDPR, is the identity systems. As we build these applications, we have this sophisticated AI and blockchain and all these different, like, Legos, I call them, to build up these sophisticated applications. And then it comes down to, like, how you're handling data. Because think about the training models, the identity system, and what you're collecting about users is extremely important now, because now you're feeding it into some massive neural network that's going to make prediction based on it. You have to be very responsible about what you're doing with customer data, but also, like, the individual identities of those customers, how it gets anonymized if you're running some sort of predictive model or something. These are, like, big patterns that we didn't have to deal with before, because a lot of us didn't have access to this kind of systems before. And now it's like the floodgates have opened and anybody can be running a massive neural network. And you need to be responsible, to your point, Sajid.
And as you said, since all of this stuff is available in Azure and some other clouds as well, it's not difficult for somebody to get access to it, right? You could take, let's call him or her the crazy scientist, they say, "Oh yeah, I have all this easy to use services, and I'm going to take this random data set and start playing around with it. I think you bring up a good point. We have to be careful where we're getting the data from, what we're using it for, do we have the right to use it, and then what is the outcome of that analysis, right? What do we do with that? Are we using it for good or for not good? Let's put it that way. So those are some of the things that come to my mind when I think about AI. But yeah, I wanted to just try and I'm kind of curious about blending something like blockchain with AI, right? I mean, is this something that you guys have given any thought on? Like, is there an intersection somewhere between the blockchain world and the AI world?
Definitely, there is. I can speak to a couple use cases. Probably one of the biggest ones is identifying patterns of people that are using the system to see if there's something either bad going on or something that's an anomaly that needs to be addressed or something like that.
I see, I see. So almost like trying to see if somebody is trying to hack the blockchain network or
That's
something
right.
like that.
Because again, you're looking at something with a high bar for, the low-level ledger technology is quite complex. And, looking at it from the outside, though, looking in, you can see patterns around, like, what's going on here between these two entities. I see all this massive stuff that I usually don't see. I see a lot of transactions flowing through there. I see empty transactions flowing through there. I see all this kind of nefarious, maybe potentially data there. So, being able to leverage some technology to be able to analyze that in a quick fashion and be able to report that back to you, because it's so hard to like go dissect that data yourself, because it's pretty massive. And I wouldn't say it's massive in size of like gigabytes and stuff like that. It's more massive in like scale out size, because there may be 100,000 transactions and you're trying to figure out, are they legit? Is someone trying to attack the network? Like, what's going on here? And that's a challenge, and I think AI can help in that sense. I think the other thing that it can help with too is basically being able to provide stronger KYC, we call it, which is know your customer. So basically, as we're working, especially in enterprise blockchain solutions, there's a big desire to not be anonymous, like we have in Bitcoin or public crypto or something. There's a strong thing for enterprises when we're working B2B to know exactly who you're talking to. That's super important. And so the KYC component of, as new people are being brought into this system, how can we run background checks on these guys, for lack of a better term? How can we have strong attested information that says, yep, Kale says he's Kale and I can guarantee he is because of XYZ. I have all this material that I've collected that basically lead me to the decision that yes, that is Kale, because not just because he said so.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you're kind of using AI for fraud detection in those cases, right? Or
Yeah, I think in some of those cases, I mean, there's obviously others. Those are the ones that just come top of mind to me.
no, but I'm thinking of a situation where I agree, but if you're in one of the what is the non-public blockchain? What is that referred to?
We call them private consortiums,
Private
mostly, yeah.
consortiums. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but on the other hand, if you're a public blockchain like Bitcoin, and you can, is it possible for someone to inject themselves as a node within the network and then just watch and see what's going on, right? And then over time, collecting enough information to using some of these AI models to figure out stuff that's going on in the blockchain, trying to figure out, okay, is the market moving this way? Is the market moving that way? Is that something that could be done, like using, thinking of using AI in a more nefarious way?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's nefarious. I mean, that's a like even a policing function, to track things that are happening over there, whether it be illegal funds transfer or something of that nature. So definitely that's possible because those things are totally open and transparent. There's obviously like two camps there, right? The good guys and the bad guys, and people will try to spread things over many, many accounts and make it harder for people to kind of track and say, yeah, that's Sajid and he's doing this. But it's I would say that there's there's things that are making things very close to being anonymous, but traditional older ones were not anonymous, you know, like Bitcoin or Ethereum or something. That's I will call pseudo-anonymous. It's not really anonymous. Yeah, there's a hash associated with you, but there's no, I mean, you
Nobody
could create
knows it's you.
thousands of, yeah, exactly, but you could create thousands of them and then link them all back to you and things like that. But there is no way to like change it tomorrow and say like Sajid was this address today and tomorrow he's this address without moving funds between them, which could be tracked, right? Because every transaction is transparent. So in that respect, I think, but there is some forthcoming technology that's making things almost totally anonymous, which is awesome in one way and bad in another. So I have to figure out how to use that for good as well. But I think that it'll be interesting as well.
Cool. This is good stuff, Kale. I think it's definitely opening up my eyes to some new possibilities with Azure. What do you see, like, if you were to put on your future hat on and say, how do you see things, let's say 10 years from now? Is it, there's always been this, we've all been expecting this time where it's going to be like the some of the movies, some of the stuff we see in movies, Minority Report, and we talked about Terminator and things like that. I know those are just movies, but people always envision that, hey, that is where AI will take us, where things will be kind of more run more automatically for us for the most part, and humans will have less and less decisions to make and things to do. Do you see that as an eventual possibility, or is that just like too far-fetched, the way the technology is not just there yet?
I'm not as scared about the future of AI. I think that those are, I think if you can automate things that help people, I mean, I just read something and I can't remember the author of it, but I was just reading something the other day about people talking about money and things being like super important for happiness and all this stuff. And it came back to the most important commodity for humans is time. It is the absolute most, not money, not anything else, it's time. And so basically, if you can figure out a way to give people back time, this is more valuable than anything. So more valuable than money even, and some people would say, oh, that's not true, but it is true. Like if you have more time to focus on doing things that you love or you're passionate about or whatnot, this is what it's about, right? Not because you could make more money then if you say, hey, I'm not going to do these tasks that I usually have to do, like cleaning my house or going and getting the groceries. If a robot in the future can just automatically bring those things because he knows what I like to eat and he does all that stuff for me, this is a good thing, I think. Obviously, there's going to be issues, as there is always there's with technology as these things mature or whatnot. But you look at something like even Uber, and that's not even AI driven, but how much has that changed the world? Where like I, maybe not in rural areas as much, but in a city, it's like a no-brainer now. You just like walk outside, and within 2 minutes, somebody's there to take you wherever you need to go. It's pretty awesome. I mean, I couldn't imagine that like 15 years ago. It was like, no, you had to hail a cab and you had to go through this process. You had to pay in the cab, which was a pain in the butt. Sometimes you had to pay cash, and it was like, it was a mess.
No, that's a very good point. So I like the way that you put it, which is AI can enrich our lives that way, and that's what I hope that our customers that use our AI services on Azure will take that approach, of how we can make customers' lives better using AI. Well, this has been really good, Gail. Anything more you want to add to the discussion before we close out?
No, I think this was good. I just wanted to take some time. I know this is a little non-traditional. Usually we have product group guys on here or something, but it is almost July 4th here in the States, so it's a little slim to find people. And so that's one thing here. And then the other thing was I just thought this was an interesting topic to center on and come back to say, hey, we talk about all these Lego blocks, but here's what this stuff's actually leading up to, kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for bringing that up. Great topic as always, and happy 4th of July to you. Talk to you next week, Kale.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.